Welcome to episode 67. I'm Stuart McCullough. I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with this week's industrial roundup, and in particular with community health, which continues a year of intensive bargaining. We're pleased to confirm that, broadly speaking, we have reached agreement in principle with the Health Workers Union for a new agreement for community health covering health and allied managers and administrative employees. There are a few details still to iron out, but we look forward to drafting that agreement for that agreement to proceed to ballot. With respect to the MSAV, the union that covers dietitians, psychologists and pharmacists, amongst others, we are still continuing negotiations following their counter-proposal. And with respect to allied health professionals, we are continuing negotiations with a meeting on Tuesday of this week with VABA to provide feedback from community health members to that union. We're also returning to the Fair Work Commission on Friday. With respect to health service members, we are commencing our doctors' EBA forums this week, starting at Melbourne Health. Later this week, we'll be in Traralgon, but we'll also be visiting Warrnambool, Bendigo, Shepparton, and Eastern Health at its Box Hill campus. It's still possible for members to register to attend either through the website or by contacting administration here at VHAA. A copy of the presentation notes are available to you through the VHAA community app. Specifically, log in to MyIR and open the current agreement. There you'll find the agreement as it's been lodged and awaiting approval, along with the presentation slides for you to download beforehand. We're also meeting this week with our rural and regional HR and IR members on Wednesday. There is an SDP PWG meeting scheduled with the HWU on Thursday, and bargaining will be occurring with biomedical engineers on Friday. As always, all of our activities are summarised through the VHAA community app. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. And joining me for this week's discussion is Senior Workplace Relations Consultant Daniel Pullen. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you, Stuart.
Daniel, would you be good enough to reveal the clue, or indeed clues, that will reveal to the audience the subject for today's discussion?
Of course.
And for the benefit of those people who are listening rather than watching to this podcast, and in fact, for the benefit of those people who are watching, because it's hard to see if they're lying down, I think you're going to need to hold those up. So what do we have here? We have
A Dr. Seuss book titled My Book About Me.
Now, for those people who aren't familiar with My Book About Me, it's one of the greatest children's books of all time. Did you have this as a child?
I didn't.
I thought not. And in terms of this one here, we have
It's my first pop-up book of prehistoric animals.
Indeed. And the great thing about this book is, check this out. Whoa.
That's,
That's
actually pretty cool.
Yeah, the animals come out. There's a woolly mammoth, all sorts of great stuff. So based on these particular clues, what would you say that the subject for today's discussion is? Do you need some thinking time?
I might need some thinking time.
Let's have some thinking time.
Thinking time, thinking music?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Daniel, I think that's enough thinking time. Would you care to hazard a guess?
Look, I'm really struggling this time, Stuart.
All right, let's unpack it then. So we have this book on prehistoric animals, and that really refers to the prehistoric state of affairs that used to apply to doctors in training under the previous enterprise agreement. An enterprise agreement where the mode of employment is predominantly fixed-term contracts, and yet we have no intersection between fixed-term contracts and how that works with parental leave. And here we have a book by a doctor, Dr. Seuss, which is a children's book, which really gives us our theme for today, which is the changes being made to the terms and conditions for doctors in training in terms of fixed-term contracts and parental leave.
It's abundantly clear now. Thank you, Stuart.
I thought it was obvious.
It is obvious now you've pointed it out. Thank you.
So just to make a start, let's start with the fixed-term nature of employment and the period of employment clause. That's a clause 12 of the new Doctors in Training Agreement. Just talk about what it was prior to the scope, or what the scope of that provision is.
So the period of employment clause in the current agreement, but specifically clause 12 of the previous doctors in training agreement, provided that a doctor in training may be employed for a maximum of 156 calendar weeks, which is 3 years, but not less than 52 calendar weeks, being 1 year, unless otherwise specifically stated.
So I think it's worth pointing out that hasn't changed.
Correct.
From the old agreement to the new agreement. So during the bargaining process, we were working through the various logs of claim. We made claims in this space. In particular, we were conscious of trying to identify any parts of the doctors and training agreement in particular that had a negative or unfair effect for those people who took parental leave. But the AMA came at it from a different direction in terms of their log of claims. They sought to amend this clause also. Could you provide a brief summary of their claim?
So the AMA's log of claims sought to increase the minimum contract length for the doctors in training under this agreement to 104 calendar weeks, being 2 years, and for the only mechanism to have shorter contract lengths would be at the doctor's request.
Okay. So both parties have made claims for the same purpose, but have had different ideas as to how best to progress those claims. So I understand that the AMA also saw provisions around the protection of leave to take into account the potentially disruptive nature or the disruptions to the employment arising from parental leave.
That's correct.
And when we think about that, that's really trying to come up with rules that deal with the unique nature of fixed-term employment for this group. Because we have continuity and transfer of leave entitlements for everybody else. It's really just trying to put this group on the same footing as everybody else.
Correct.
So just in terms of how those claims were expressed during the bargaining phase.
So the AMA and their doctors in training representatives strongly advocated for the introduction of a minimum 2-year contract as a solution to protect doctors from what the AMA saw as a system in its current format that reduces the likelihood of a doctor in training raising concerns about underpayments or excess hours or other entitlements that they may or may not have been receiving correctly. In addition to that, it failed to protect doctors who become the primary carer of a child from losing their accrued leave entitlements when the contract lapsed.
Okay. So members who've followed our previous podcasts on the topic of the medical specialists and doctors in training agreement would recognise something of a trend in this respect.
Look, that's correct. It was a clear push from the AMA to modernise both agreements, but the doctors in training agreement in particular, both parties, and you know, it was VHIA's goal, and it was one of our positions from the outset of bargaining, is to address some of the gender inequities that existed in the previous doctors in training agreement. And we had to acknowledge through bargaining and in the resultant agreement that the workforce is now predominantly female for the doctors in training cohort. So we had to have an agreement that came back from the prehistoric era and started to draw from some of the industrial commonalities and expectations that we, other people within the Victorian public health sector are afforded that weren't afforded to doctors in training.
Yeah, okay. So let's start with that claim for 2-year contracts. That would be a paradigm shift in terms of away from the existing arrangements. Can you talk about the process of engagement with members on that question?
So we engaged directly with our reference group, but also we had some subgroups of that reference group, which included the HMO manager group, which VHA attended at their monthly PMCV meetings, but also members of the Victorian Medical Executive, which consists of chief medical officers of the Victorian public health sector as well.
So the new agreement provides for a period of employment that has that ability for still between 1 to 3 years.
Yep.
And the claim for 2-year contracts, I understand that there's some work to be done during the life of the agreement.
That's correct. So over the life of the agreement, a joint working party will undertake a body of work to increase the minimum contract length over the life of the agreement. And we'll engage representatives from the sector to assist us in that body of work and provide input.
So what's the mechanism for us to do that examination?
So what that'll involve is meeting with HMO managers, IR managers, chief medical officers, and talk about the process by which a junior doctor progresses through their training and their both learning and training, but also
providing work for for an employer and conducting work for an employer. So it's a unique scenario that's really unique to the Doctors in Training Agreement. So we'll engage very closely with that group.
And I understand that we'll be doing a lot of work through the Service Delivery Partnership Plan working group as a mechanism for that. I'm looking forward to doing that work, but I must say that the difficulty with that claim for two-year contracts as a proposal to redress the gender inequity provisions, the challenge in that for me was simply that by making it every 2 years, it simply meant that the problem occurred less often.
Correct.
As opposed to dealing with the problem. And the other issue with that approach was that it was seeking to deal with the heart of the issue indirectly rather than directly.
Correct.
Whereas where we ended up, I think, is a far more direct approach to resolving that issue. So just the takeaway then is that the length of the contract for a doctor under the Doctors in Training Agreement remains between 1 to 3 years, or a lesser period for placements arranged by the specialist medical college.
That's correct.
And I understand that the parties agreed to introduce a requirement for a health service then to offer an extension to their contract as a result of certain absences. That is, we came at that issue of how do we deal with interruptions to employment arising from parental leave in a different way. Can you talk through those provisions?
Look, that's correct. And the agreement provides that where a doctor is absent for a continuous period exceeding 3 months from employment as a result of parental leave, family violence leave or carer's leave, they'll be offered an extension to their contract that's equal to the length of their absence and the remaining period of their contract.
I think the word offered, we'll come back to that in a moment. Interestingly, that list of reasons for absence being parental leave, family violence leave and carer's leave, the character of those types of leave are quite different. Particularly the parental leave is something that you generally, with the exception perhaps of adoption leave, you know in advance that you'll be taking that leave. You may not know that you'll be taking the other kinds of leave. So in the context of parental leave, procedurally, how does that work?
So prior to the scheduled commencement of parental leave that exceeds a three-month period, the health service shall offer to vary the period of the contract to accommodate the length of the parental leave and the length of the remaining period of the existing contract.
And in terms of the length of the parental leave and the length of the remaining period of the contract, those are one and the same?
Correct.
And if the doctor exercises their right to request additional parental leave, that is, it's a right under the Fair Work Act to request a second year of parental leave. If the health service agrees to that request, are they entitled to be offered a further contract extension?
They are.
For carer's leave and family violence leave, which we talked about as being a little bit different because you may not, less likely to be aware that you will need that kind of leave, what's the process in that instance?
So in a similar nature to the parental leave, albeit carer's leave and family violence leave is less predictable in nature. But the health service shall offer to vary the period of the contract to accommodate the absence exceeding a three-month period due to carer's leave or family violence leave. Now, the obligation remains to extend the contract, and that will occur upon the receipt of a request to be absent for a period exceeding 3 months.
So it's interesting. It may well be that that is an incremental thing.
Correct.
As opposed to from the outset.
And it remains a continuous absence.
And it may also be that the period of the absence at the time that that three-month trigger is reached is unknown.
Correct.
But I think it'll be about engaging with the employee to manage that. Okay. So it appears that the key terms here are continuous period and offer.
Correct. So the health service is only required to offer to vary the period of the contract to accommodate those periods, and those periods must be continuous periods of absence that exceed 3 months.
Okay. And can you provide an example of where the doctor accepts the offer to extend the contract?
I can. So a doctor commences in February and has a contract that ends in February the following year. The doctor commences a 12-month parental leave period in September, and prior to commencing their parental leave, the health service offers to extend the doctor's contract by way of variation. The variation provides for the doctor to extend their contract for the period of the 12 months of parental leave and to return to work at the cessation of their parental leave and complete the remaining 5 months of their contract of employment, representing the difference between the September commencement date of their parental leave and what was the original end date of their contract being February, had the leave not had occurred.
Daniel, there's a subclause in that relevant provision which talks about that nothing prevents the parties from agreeing to some other period. What's the circumstance under which a doctor may not want that kind of extension, but may want a different kind of approach.
So an example, we'll stick with the commencement date of February and the end date of February, but the doctor's parental leave may commence in April. And prior to the parental leave commencing, the health service will offer to extend and vary that doctor's contract. Then the doctor's indicated that they wish to be absent on parental leave for a 12-month period, but they intend on obtaining employment next February and obtaining their employment at a different health service to the one where they are currently employed. So the health service then agrees to not vary the doctor's contract of employment on the basis that the doctor's requested that their original end of contract date will be sufficient, and they'll obtain alternative employment following that date the following year.
It could also be that the parties agree to some other length of time.
Correct.
Okay. So the intention of the insertion here for the clause was to keep the doctor employed, notwithstanding that they're on leave, and protecting both their continuity of service and their leave accrual. They don't lose those things because of the affliction of time.
That's correct.
And that really means that the doctor in training who was on parental leave is in the same position as an employee who has ongoing employment.
Correct.
I understand that there are also some changes with respect to the personal carer's leave provision, again with a view to providing protection to those people whose contract would otherwise lapse during a period of parental leave. What are those changes?
Yeah, that's correct. So subclause 61.8 of the new Doctors in Training Agreement extends the allowable period of absence from 5 weeks to up to 24 months where the absence of the doctor from employment was due to the birth or adoption of a child for the period consistent with the long parental leave clause. And it's provided that the doctor gives to the employer evidence that would satisfy a reasonable person that the reason for the break in employment was consistent with that subclause being for the purposes of parental leave in accordance with the long parental leave clause.
The interesting thing about that provision is that the last clause we were talking about was ensuring there was no break. Mm. This is a clause that recognises that in some people going onto parental leave may let their contract run out for parental leave purposes. Mm. There may be a break in employment, but that if it is for that reason, shouldn't be to their disadvantage.
Correct.
And so, Daniel, I understand that there are also changes with respect to the long service leave clause on this issue. What were the changes to that provision?
There's been changes to subclause 68.8 of the new Doctors in Training Agreement, and that provides that an absence on parental leave in accordance with the parental leave clause or an equivalent period for parental leave purposes up to 24 months between engagements will not be counted as service, but will not break service.
Terrific. So those provisions taken together are really intended to ensure that people aren't worse off for taking parental leave. That's a big step forward for this agreement. It's well overdue. But we would welcome any questions with regards to that, because it's important that those new provisions function as intended.
That's correct.
Daniel, thank you so much for taking us through those changes to the Doctors in Training Agreement with respect to the fixed-term contract and parental leave. I think there's no other way to finish this particular podcast than by reading from my first pop-up book of prehistoric animals. So I'm going to select today, let's see, the woolly mammoth. Stop me if you've heard this before. Mammoths were a type of prehistoric elephant. The woolly mammoth, which is distinguished by its long, shaggy hair, was almost 4 metres tall and appeared about 2 million years ago during the Ice Age and the Pleistocene epoch, which is about the first time.